Anyways, as I was saying, the best school presenter that came in at the time was the firefighter. And he would come in to show you when and how to stop a fire if it happens. So he had that box, and he would light the match inside of it. Things would get a little crazy, you know, a little fire. And as a kid, that was pretty cool. And then he would snuff it out by putting the glass over it, and the fire would suffocate itself. And then he would look at the kids and say, "This is why you don't mess around with fire."
And we'd say, "What do you mean? That was awesome."
Yeah, and I was confused because the only thing I wanted to do after that was start a fire.
I was confused because, well, it's like, it's the same thing with, like, the DARE program. Like, you would go into an auditorium and, like, they'd be like, "Did you know you could get high sniffing glue?" And I was like, "Wait, really?"
Yeah, that, see, this is why even health class, it was great. They were just like, "Hey, look at all these drugs." And I was thinking, "What?" I was like, "I didn't even know these existed." And they're like, "Yeah, but don't do them. Like, these are all the side effects, too. Like, pot."
And here's where to get them.
Yeah, it's like, pot, hey, not so bad, but don't do it. Like, but meth, you really never do. And here's the before and after shots. And I was like, "Oh, shit, I don't want to do that."
I was like,
but anytime it was marijuana or something, the before and after shots, they didn't actually look that bad. Everybody actually looked marginally happier. I want some of that.
In the second one, they just looked chill as fuck.
Yeah, they just look cool.
One of them was just
the guy was
a regular guy, and then in the second picture, he was just doing a kickflip.
Yeah, it was like Tony Hawk just doing a kickflip off of the school building, and I go, "Man, that was rad." No, like, I remember the after-school specials that they would show you where everything was pretty good in Sarah's life until one day her friend introduced her to cocaine, and I was like, "Oh, shit."
Do you remember the one where Tom Cruise did steroids?
No. Was that an after-school special?
Yeah. And then he, like, yelled...
Wait, what? Like, Tom... Wait, was this before his acting career took off? Or was it, like, hosting...
This is when he was, like, 16.
Oh, shit.
I think it was Tom Cruise. I'll verify while you continue your end of the story.
No, I mean, I believe you. No, but there was one in particular, and for those who are joining us, Rich and I are recalling the weird presentations that we'd usually have in school. This started because Rich was telling me about the sound of a school bell. I could not remember it, but I could remember several sessions during school of a man giving a seminar about testicular cancer, the firefighter. But also, in health class, I remember one distinct after-school special was to show the dangers of bulimia. And this was because... Oh, Rich, I'm not even sharing my camera. I want you to see me. There was one... They were expressing the dangers of bulimia, and it was because this girl who had been suffering from it, she had self-image issues, you know, and
what she
was doing was that she was eating in copious amounts because the cool girl at school was like, "Oh, don't worry, I don't gain any weight." I'm like, "Well, this is a weird conversation to have at school." And they're like, "Yeah, I don't gain any weight. I just eat all the cake and ice cream I want. Yeah, I just eat all this shit. I don't need to worry about that." I'm like, never once in school have I ever had to justify myself eating any of that. But it's a different world, I understand. And
yeah.
She's like, "Yeah, I just throw it up in the bathroom. I just make myself throw up as if it was some revelation." And then the girl starts throwing up. And then at the end, she ends up throwing up in the jars. You remember this?
Oh, God, I do. And that, like, that was the most confusing.
You know, and then the mother discovers it.
Why? Like, why was she...
Like some mausoleum?
Like, okay, bulimia aside, which is bad enough, that's just gross.
That is exactly what I walked away with saying. Because it's one thing to say, "Hey, listen, bulimia is bad." But it's a completely different thing to say, "Don't collect this shit and put it in your closet like it's some collection for your trophy."
Because you're definitely going to get caught.
It was weird.
Was that the message?
And I'm not... And listen... I'm not going to try to say that I don't understand. It is a disorder. I get that. You know, that's why they call it an eating disorder. Maybe there's something to it where it's hiding the shame. I don't know what it could
be. There might be better ways to... Again, yeah, the disorder is bad. Maybe there's better ways to teach about it.
I'm just saying
But we're talking about it.
I've actually known a person or two who suffered from eating disorders, but never once, even after they got help, they reference the same video, because I feel like this is the same after school special that's been circulating. They're like, yeah, that's gross as fuck. I don't even know why they would do that. Like, just go to the bathroom and just flush
Yeah,
it. Like,
it's
you're good.
very weird.
It must have been like the most severe case. So I distinctly remember that, and it just struck a chord with me, because I was thinking, man, that's some weird shit. I can't imagine that, which is why my heart went out to so many people who are suffering from those things. And it was just a wacky trip, man. I mean, besides that, those are the ones that really stuck out with me in school. It was the firefighter, the dude with one ball, and the bulimia. It was a lot. But I can't remember what sound the school bell made.
And that's how we got here, yeah.
That's literally, by the way, one presentation per, like, school building. The firefighter was elementary school. The man with testicular cancer was middle school. And the bulimia was high school. So I think I got to save one thing per...
One core
memory. One core memory, and this is what I chose it for. I couldn't have chosen it for anything else, any knowledge, just
well,
this.
You know what? I'm gonna bring us full circle to tell you what I think is how I got to the school bell thing, is because I was comparing it to the school bell from another high school in our hometown, and what I didn't tell you is the reason I was in that other high school, which is a fun story.
I was actually gonna question this too. I was like, "What are you talking about?
This
you went
was,
to my high school."
Yeah, no. This was during the school day. It might have been on our last week of high school, I want to say.
You can't do that. You can't go to another school grounds while you're still part of another school.
I did. I do it all the time. It was I do it all the time. Nobody even checked. That's the best part, is nobody checked anything. We just walked around.
Oh, my God.
Me and Vinny went because if you I'm going to say, of course you remember Dr. Pam. Who was not in?
Oh, the bio teacher.
Yeah, yeah. He who was no longer in our school our senior year, if you recall, or he was not for the first half of the day, whatever reason. He was over there teaching at the other school. So we texted a friend of ours who went to that school, and we just showed up for like his sixth period class at the other school and sat in on it. And he literally walks in the door. And he goes, "What the fuck?"
Kid, it's really true what they say. Kids in high school, middle school, etc., they're fucking relentless. Like, they'll just go for your jugular and then ask for more. Can you imagine? This dude just literally wants to do his 9 to 5. Just get the fuck out. And people just won't leave him alone. That's pretty funny. I like how he immediately recognized it. Remember when we used to actually we call him Dr. Eggman or something, because he literally, this is why kids are relentless. He literally resembled like the shape of a perfect egg.
We had his class together, and I'll never
big love to Dr. Pam.
I'll never forget this one particular day when you and I were in that class, because good old Dr. Pam would always come into class. I think we had the last period of the day, and he would always come in with the Diet Dr. Pepper. And I remember this one day, you just walk
That's
around
true.
And you're like, "Hey, Dr. Pam, can I get one of them Diet Dr. Peppers?" And he's like, "No." And you're just like, "All right," you sat down.
I think that's maybe why I actually got into Dr. Pepper for so long. It's because I get, you know what, though? What a tease to be drinking. He had a mini fridge in his place. In his room, with a nice ice cold Diet Dr. P. Dr. Pam with a Dr. P. The man with a living irony.
He was living the dream, I tell you.
That, quite literally, I used to think back in the day, wow, if I only became a teacher, I too could have a mini fridge stacked out with Dr. Peppers. And then when I went to college,
and look at
I realized, yeah, when I went to college, I did have a mini fridge stacked out with Dr. Peppers, and I did not need to get my teaching degree. So I kind of cut a few corners there, and I lived the dream my way.
Same here, man. It's right behind me. As it turns out, when you're a podcaster, you can put anything you want in your fridge.
You too can have anything you desire in your fridge.
You too can have a podcast. It's not hard. I've got like four.
That's true. Honestly, I remember, what was it? Saying that somebody has a podcast is the new something. It's like I have something. I don't even know what it is now.
I like to...
I don't know. What the hell did people used to have back in the day? Like,
I don't know.
10 years ago. What did everybody have?
SARS.
Oh, come on. No, no. Like, oh, come on. Come on.
I don't know. You know, at least I like to put myself, you know, I was doing it before it was the big hype. And, you know, some of them are at least moderately successful. So I think I can...
It's a big hype.
Some of them.
It's what scientists call the big hype.
Some of them generate revenue and everything.
Yes. Well, welcome everybody. If you lasted this long, welcome to the Gecko Games Cast. If you have a memory from school that you just can't get out of your head,
email it
in terms
to us.
Of an assembly meeting. Remember those assembly meetings? I'm not going down the rabbit hole. If you have a memory, let us know. Because for whatever reason, they stay in my dreams and I can't fight them off no matter how hard I try.
I'm running.
They're stuck with me. I will say this, and this is something that I do firmly believe and know that to be true, that I was talking about with Rich. The man who came in to discuss testicular cancer was very hellbent on ensuring us that no matter what happens in life, he was still able to sleep with his wife. And I'm not saying this unironically. I'm not saying it. I am not saying it to make fun of the guy. I swear to God, he, when I think back on it, he was very aggressive.
That's, I just like to imagine is him like getting way too close to you in particular and being like, I see you doubting me. I'm shooting ropes, young man.
And I'm like, I'm happy for you.
Is anybody else seeing what's going on? And
I'm very
just like, Eric, be polite.
Be polite, please. Listen to him. I'm very happy for this episode because I actually played a new game.
Woo!
I actually played games in general, and I know what you're thinking. What? Yeah,
it's
happened.
I played.
I'm going to be the one
game.
Who's aggressively proving something to you.
And I played a new game and an old game.
Oh, well. It depends on what you mean by old. If it's like from the past 10 years. Is CrossCode old? Is it considered
it's,
old?
Well, it's been around for a while. All the content's finally there, which is why I'm finally playing it. Like, I think they
what do you mean all the content? Did they ever have an expansion?
Well, no. Like, I don't even know if they were calling it early access, but it was like, oh, 3/4 of the game is here at one point, and then the game was mostly done, and they just recently added an epilogue. And then they were like, okay. Now it's a complete package. And I was like, all right, well, now I'm going to start it.
Well,
I want to hear about Loop Hero.
Yeah, I've been playing Loop Hero, or as I call it, the Loop Daddy, which I'm pretty sure is Mark Rivoli, that guy who Twitch streams with his shirt off and just loops. I believe people do call him the Loop Daddy. But this is not...
There's a new Loop Daddy in town.
Yeah, there is a new Loop Daddy in town, and it's me. Loop Hero was published by Devolver. I actually, it's astounding how Devolver, to me, first started off as the publishing company for Hotline Miami. And ever since then, any game that I've actually played under the Devolver publishing moniker has been nothing but a banger. Like, it's always been a
banger. Devolver
knows
how to pick them, and we also got to give Devolver Moss credit, because they are the brave publishing company that finally brought Metal Wolf Chaos to the U.S.
Yeah, this is exactly what I mean. You can't... They keep hitting. They just don't miss, no matter how hard they try. And you can bring me a game and you say, this one's okay. It's not the greatest thing on planet Earth. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they've always brought consistently good games to the center stage. This was developed by Four Quarters. I think it was made in Game Maker Studio, too. And I love seeing games and titles that are made with those... studio tools. I love seeing games that are made with these tools because it's crazy the things you can accomplish with them.
It shows how much you can
big
stretch
ups to them.
It and just like
yeah
it doesn't take much. Like if you can get your base systems to work, you can make something really fucking cool in there.
Yeah, and I've been playing it for I think like 5 hours now, which is a testament to how addictive it is, because me playing a game in general these days is like pulling teeth. But game's premise is really simple. You are a hero, and a map spawns that essentially forms a loop. And you are a hero that traverses this loop and along the way fight different monsters to gain loot, to basically equip for yourself, to make yourself stronger. And you keep continuing to go across this loop on this map, fighting the same monsters. However, there's a twist. There are different cards that you earn throughout this time, and you can place them on the map to further expand the enemies that are there, and also just the different resources that you can grab during your loop journey. The whole purpose of this, or the story behind it, is that some lich, like, I don't know, erased the universe or some stuff, and now nothing exists, quote-unquote. Yeah, there is a lich involved. This is all true. The rumors are true. And he, like, erases... the universe. I don't, this is why liches are fucking dumb. Like, what are they doing? And he erases everything. And the hero basically is just looping because he's trying to revive fragmented memories of the world, hence why there was just this literal loop. And it's just a very cool pixel graphic game. And it's very simple in nature, though. The battles that take place are auto-turned, meaning, or well, I don't even know what the word is. They just happen automatically. That's the point.
You click a button and it just it goes like,
yeah. Whenever you encounter it in the loop,
it's like a logic
engine. There's
literally
two controls.
Is it like you're building a logic engine?
Kind of, yeah. And there's two controls to it. There's literally the planning phase and the adventure phase. When you're in planning, which can be manipulated at any point in time, when you're in planning, you literally just stop. You stop time for a second. The hero stops going through the loop automatically because he just tracks automatically in this squarish pattern. And you can place down these cards and kind of better plan your map. The loop does not expand. The loop does not change. What only changes are the things that you put inside of it, the monsters that you're placing inside of it, the different areas, the different resources that you collect, etc. When you're
which
in adventure mode, though, which is literally...
Also what the Roanoke, it's what the Roanoke settlers carved into the tree before they disappeared. They just wrote, the loop does not change. The loop only devours.
That's not true. That can't be true. I don't believe you. I don't believe you at all. For a moment before you got to the quote, I was thinking, wow, not bad. Fuck off. Now I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry. I had a good joke about Dutch settlers, so I had to.
No, we're beyond that. In the adventure mode, though, and you literally toggle between the planning phase and the adventure phase with like pressing your space bar. It's really easy to do. You just continue, like the automatic traversing of the loop and fighting of the monsters continues. And basically you just have one goal, to expand this map and basically build upon your existing loop as much as you can using these cards that you're collecting. The cards can spawn more enemies, they can spawn different environments that give you certain buffs, whatever it may be. And while you're fighting monsters, you can sometimes get loot that you just equip on yourself and make yourself stronger. That's it. And the loop either ends two ways, one or three ways, I should say. One, if you kill the Lich at the end, who's kind of like the final boss for the first part of the story, which I haven't done yet because he just really slaps me every single time. Two, if you die, and if you die, you lose about 60% of your resources, I believe, and you only get to take back 40 to a settlement. And one, if you just run away, which again, I think you can take up to 60% of your resources and lose 40. Then you go back when you're done out of the main loop, and you can go back to your settlement and just build new buildings, which give you more cards. It's basically a nice expansive roguelike system that's just very eloquently done. It's very simple and it's very addictive because the gameplay and the premise is just so straightforward. Like, there's a lot to it. There's a lot in-depth work that you could do to kind of finagle your way through and become successful every time. But at the end of the day, it's literally just, are you going to have a good run or not, like any other roguelike? Are you getting the right items at the right times? Are you playing your cards right in terms of spawning enemies? Are you dying? I don't know. Just any of that bullshit.
Normal
stuff. I have not been able to win yet. It's kind of giving me a bit of a crisis. It's kind of pissed me off. But the music slaps so hard. And the graphics slap. Everything's just really good about it. And it's only, I think, $12. I think, or maybe
it's,
like 13.
It's on sale for, I think, 12. It's going to normally be 15. It's on sale for $12.74.
It's an insane. It's actually a really insane deal for a game. Like, I imagine that once I beat this Lich or something, maybe there's some more stuff to do. And I've even seen people beat the game, so obviously there's an end game to all this, but. For $12, I've already gotten 5 hours out of it. That's a win. I don't even give a shit. That's pretty good, yeah. Like that's immediately a return on investment for me than spending $60 on something and spending like 4 hours on
it. Yeah, even if you stopped here, that's worth the $12.
For sure. I didn't even hear about it. It came out February 3rd. Didn't even hear about it until last week.
Wait, it's been out that long? Because people.
It says initial release date, February 3rd.
I think it may have, maybe it just exited early access because I knew of this game and all of a sudden a lot of people are talking about it.
Well, it's an addicting game, and it's so funny too because it makes sense as to why it's addicting. It's literally just you going in a loop.
March 4th.
Oh, what's Google saying? The initial release date is what happens. This is what happens.
Early access. I don't know. Yeah, on its Steam page it says March 4th.
But it's pretty damn cool because you know what? You start off the game with playing as the warrior class. Apparently, there are different classes like a rogue and a necromancer and a bunch of other stuff, so it keeps it fresh. And there's just different build. It's just a really enjoyable game, and the art style is very simple. It's all pixel graphics. It looks pretty cool. The character art's pretty cool. It's a solid deal for even a $15 game. Like, you talk bang for your buck, this thing's ridiculous. I could probably see this coming out on the Switch too in the future, but
I bet it will.
I don't know. It's just a matter. I'm sure it will. Because the one thing I was thinking of was, when can I get this on the Switch to play this on the go? I am so positive that this will come out eventually, and it actually made me want to play Darkest Dungeon just because I was thinking, oh, this grimdark roguelike universe. I want to play another game like this after it's done, and I know Darkest Dungeon is a completely different game
Yeah.
than this, but it just kind of got me
Darkest
back in the
Dungeon
mood to
likes to
play
punish you.
roguelikes. Yeah, and this, so does this game, the loop, and you keep going back to the loop, and it never ends, and you just keep, but you lose hours of your life with this shit, and it's just a really impressive game. It just is. I love it.
Sounds it very cool. Loop
No, Rich, you don't
Hero.
understand. You don't understand, Rich. It's a really good game.
I think I get it.
All right. Well, that's the way it is right now, and I encourage everybody to at least try it if, or look it up. Again,
You
it's like
have the
12
means.
bucks. Yeah, if you got the means, you got the schmeans and the means, please do it. And yeah, that's my game.
Cool. I see
But
you also
Rich, tell
play.
me.
Oh,
Oh,
I was.
you want me to jump into ghouls?
Yeah, because I'm curious because here's the thing. For you've been playing Super
Tell
Ghouls
me.
and Ghosts,
Yeah.
because I have this thing in my head with that re-release being a
Yeah.
thing right now of Ghosts and Goblins.
Resurrection, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, and Ghouls and Super
So.
Ghouls and Ghosts is a little different, but my always thought process when I go back to Ghosts and Goblins is I'm like, oh right, like that's a bad game.
Yeah, I mean, when. Just to explain the thought process behind why I was even playing Ghouls and Ghosts. So last week after we were talking about Ghosts and Goblins, or well, we've been talking about Resurrection for like, I don't know, the past four episodes or something that hadn't come out yet. I looked it up. It was $30. And I was initially going to do that. I was like, I always like this game style, even though I know it's ridiculously hard and punishing. And I'm just a big fan of the whole medieval fantasy kind of vibe with it. And I was into it, but I didn't want to spend $30 at the time because I was being a little stingy. And
I don't blame you.
I realized, though, that on the Super Nintendo Classics on the Switch for Switch Online, they had Super Ghouls and Ghosts. So I was thinking, I didn't even beat this ever. I can't even name a single person who's ever gotten even remotely close to beating this game that I know. Because I guess nobody's a masochist like me. And I said, let me beat this shit first. And if I do like it, then that'll further incentivize me to jumping into this. But I realized that there were two separate games. And I forgot about that. I forgot Super Ghouls and
Yeah.
Ghosts is a re-implementation of Ghosts and Goblins, which was the arcade cabinet.
Yeah, the Ghosts
And.
and Goblins is the quarter reader is the thing. Like Super Ghouls and Ghosts is a little bit more balanced to be a console experience.
It
It's
was.
the more enjoyable game.
It made me realize that Ghosts and Goblins was a terrible, terrible game. It just was. That's the game that I used to play in arcades or even barcade, and that game sucked because it was literally meant to eat your quarters, and I hated it. And when I was playing Super Ghouls and Ghosts, it was a lot better. Like, I got pissed, and there were things that were dumb and things that were plainly unfair. But it didn't strike me as the kind of dumb and unfair that a quarter eater would do for a cabinet, if that makes sense. It was more so the kind of stupid and unfair kind of gameplay that older consoles used to pull on you to justify you playing it for longer, like Ninja Gaiden or any
So you
other
would have to
game that had
call.
incredibly stupid, or like Castlevania, where games had really stupid enemy respawn locations, placements. They just made it hard. Because they wanted you to spend more time with it, so by the
They wanted you
time
to
you
call the
beat it, you
Nintendo
didn't rush through it in
hotline.
like 3 hours. Yeah,
They wanted you
exactly.
to
That
call
kind of
up
crap.
and say, "Hey, how do I find the hidden town in Zelda 2?"
Yeah. And they're just like, I don't know, man, I get paid like
You
$5 an hour.
gotta go into the town and you gotta use your spell there. And I go, why would I do that? I've never done that before.
I used to always want to work for the Nintendo Hotline until I realized just how much work that would probably entail for
Did
such
you
little
ever
pay to memorize all that.
did we talk about the guy who was interviewed who worked for the Nintendo Hotline for that Netflix documentary?
Yeah,
He
we did.
yeah,
What,
he
recap
talked
me on
about
that? Was it miserable?
he well no, he said the job itself was actually really fun and they had access to all this information to look it up, but he said the test you had to take to like get the job was ridiculous, and he actually made a cheat sheet and slid it up the sleeve of his jacket for him to take the
I'll say
test.
he muled it up in a balloon in his ass. He brought it out and he's
Because
like,
no,
"Oh, this
he
is it."
specifically he said there would be like questions about like where items were in Zelda, and like it was just like you had to have like an they wanted you to have like an encyclopedic knowledge of like every major game Nintendo had released up to that point to get the job.
Honestly, it reminds me of when I used to work at that smoothie place like 10 plus years ago, and we had to have a quiz or a test for it, and it was literally on the ingredients of like
I
everything on the menu.
remember
It
that
was
because
wild.
you guys used to tell us about it, and I'm like, wait, so you guys have to take a quiz? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, you know you make smoothies, right?
Yeah, not only it was my first job, so at the time I was thinking, man, you know, people have to take exams to become a lawyer or to get into business school or just college. The idea of taking a fucking exam to work to earn the right to work at a smoothie place to make minimum wage now in hindsight seems a little bit pointless. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also cheated on that test too, so it doesn't matter. Nothing
Granted,
is real. That's
at the
okay.
time, I worked in a gas station where I was doing drugs in the bathroom, but that's not the point.
But did you take a test to do drugs in the bathroom? Probably not.
No, I didn't.
Probably not.
They
and,
begged me to.
They practically opened the door and stuck it in my arm.
What kind of drugs did you think I was doing?
I don't know. It just came out. I'm sorry. My mind's in a different place. Yeah, but I played Ghosts and Goblins. Ah, fuck, Ghouls and Ghosts. This is what I mean. Like,
Super
why?
Ghosts and
Why
Ghosts.
Not just call it Super Ghosts and Goblins? It doesn't matter. So, I'm sure there's a reason. But I was playing it. Great game. I actually like that game a lot. Is it dumb? Yeah, but it's no more dumb than again playing like Castlevania or Ninja Gaiden back in the day for a platformer. Arthur can double jump. He was cool. The weapons are pretty cool. Some of the enemies and locations are absolute nonsense. There's the who's the flying red guy that they put in Marvel's Capcom? It's Fire something, whatever his name is. You know what I'm talking about? The demon that's there.
Yeah, no, I don't remember his name, but I know who he is.
He's like the titular adversary to Arthur, which after playing this game, I do not understand, like why this guy, this enemy with the wings is, he's the biggest pain in the ass. I'll give them that. Maybe that's why they chose him. You can't kill it without seriously dedicating an entire life to just kill it. It took me one time, and I think I timed it maybe about like 5 minutes to actually do it, which for that game, which already exists on a timer, is insane. Like, it purposely, when you throw your weapon at it, it's programmed to immediately, the second you throw it, dodge and get out of the way.
Yeah,
so
it's insane.
There's no real way to hit it unless you get it at a certain angle, and then progressively he'll jump and, you know, fly toward you and do his thing. It takes so long to kill him. And after you breathe, I just cannonball run right past him, and I could not for life me at the end of these levels. I was like, why is this guy like the main nemesis? Like, why? This guy's like a big pain in the ass. And they're bosses in these stages, so didn't get it. But I realized that the game, like halfway through, I'm like, this looks nothing like the Resurrection trailer. And I couldn't understand why, because I forgot that Ghosts and Goblins
game,
was
yeah.
even a thing. Yeah, so I beat the game 2 nights ago. Big achievement. We're talking about like gaming achievements. I felt like a fucking god after doing this, because it took a while to beat this. I didn't use the save states either, because I really just want, I love to prove to myself that I'm a tried and true masochist and love pain. It took so long, and then the game did pull the switcheroo on you, where the princess literally, and I heard about this about the game, where they send you all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
I just didn't know in what capacity. So,
Ghosts and Goblins
the final
says the
guy,
same thing.
Which is absurd. As an arcade cabinet, when I learned that, because I looked it up afterward, I didn't know the arcade cabinet did that. That's absurd. Like, there's no way you could have done it unless you were a legitimate platforming god. There's no way. But I beat it. And the princess woman, she goes, hello. Really glad that you came to save me, but I need my bracelet. This is the bracelet of power or some shit. but I dropped it along the way. Can you go back and go get it for me? That's the impetus to the entire thing. Like, oh, I dropped something and I hit it along the way. Can you go get it? And I was thinking, okay, well, they're probably going to place me right back at like stage three or something. No, they just send you all the way back to the beginning. And then I'm still thinking while I'm playing this, do I got to find this bracelet or do I just play the
Or
game?
do I just play
So
through it again? Yeah.
that's been my experience with it. It's been hellish. It really is a testament to just sticking it out. Because of this, after I looked up Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, I do not understand why purists are upset that there are easier difficulties to play this game on. I think that's dumb. I think this game needs to have those kinds of
Yeah.
difficulties because the first game was a quarter eater and literally impossible to beat at its best day.
Well, that's the
I
funny
can't
thing
understand why
is
anybody would be upset about that.
the biggest complaint I've heard from people is like the game makes it clear that it wants you to play it the classic way. And like it's almost like it's trying to make you feel bad about using those new ways. And I'm like, no, but the classic way is bad. Like if people ask me about Ghosts and Goblins, I go, yeah, that's a bad game.
Yeah, I've never. This is the. This shit happens. I mean, we've seen it too. This shit happens all the time. They pick the most. Whenever a niche game gets some sort of reboot or something, or they try to just pocket a few extra bucks, they redo the art, they redo some of the assets, and everything looks pretty damn clean. But they make it even slightly easier. All of a sudden, troves of people come out of the woodwork and they're like, yo, 30 years ago when I was like 10, I didn't have this. I didn't have the easy difficulty, so why should you? And I'm like, well, for one, I'm paying like $40 for it. Number two, I kind of want it to be good.
Also, why do
And
you give a
also, the game
shit?
was shit. Yeah,
Yeah.
like, it's like if they remade Silver Surfer, right, from the Nintendo, revamped everything, made the game longer, but they said, hey, you could have like a normal difficulty. Guarantee you that somebody's going to be like, oh, well, I didn't have normal difficulty back then. I'm going to say, what the fuck does that matter? I just want to play the game. What does that mean?
You're
Like, I
like,
just want to
hey.
be able to beat it. I could tell you 10 years ago I couldn't beat that game and I can't beat it now, but I want to now. So, what's the problem here?
Nobody cares, Todd.
Nobody cares. It's absurd. It's like, hey, we're going to sell our game so that anybody can beat it, and also we'll make it a little bit more approachable so you'll hopefully like it and not think it's garbage. I mean, I think the art style for this game is amazing. It reminds me of Miramessa or any other VanillaWare title
From
that,
artistically, it looks great. I
It
like,
looks like that.
yeah.
So,
So
all of
the
this to say, because I know I went on like a fucking rant and a half because I was so hyped that I even beat it.
that
It's a
was a
good
worthy rant.
game. This game looks good. I've looked up gameplay videos of it too, just because I was curious to just see it. There are some differences between this and Ghouls and Ghosts. Like, Arthur does not have a double jump in the original.
I know there's a mode
And.
in Resurrection where you Arthur has like a skill tree basically, and it literally opens up some of the abilities from Super Ghouls and Ghosts, like the lightning strike stuff and the double jump and all that.
Yeah, and in the I know they made some quality of life changes too, I believe, where you can carry multiple weapons at some point in the game, which is pretty damn cool. And also, if you do want to just play the hard game that's impossible, you
If you
can
want to
now
play a
too, because they
bad
have a
game,
legendary disc.
yeah, if you want to play a bad game, you have the option is available to you.
Yeah, I mean it's right there. That's what
Yeah.
I'm talking. Like, people are upset about this. I'm like, the option is right there. You could
Bro,
literally just punish
like
yourself
yeah,
if you don't want to play it.
go play the shitty version of the game you remember for
Yeah, it's
$30.
it. Trust me, it was not that good. I, for whatever reason, when I think of Ghost and Goblin, I have this nostalgia for it, but it's nostalgia for a bad game. Like, I have
Yeah.
nostalgia for a lot of bad games, and it's not because it's good. It's because it pissed me off. But almost beat Ghouls and Ghosts. By
Cool.
this time next week, I'll probably have beaten it. I'll be so elated.
We'll stay
And
tuned for that update.
well, don't call me. Maybe I shouldn't have said anything over the
Well,
air.
too late. Too late.
Because now, if I don't beat it, I'll feel a little
You'll
shitty.
feel you'll be
But
like a coward.
yeah, I'm not gonna get Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection just yet, but I will in the future. But what I want to hear though
Tell
from
me.
you, because that's enough about me. Tell me, what's it called? How do you pronounce it? Maquette?
Maquette, yeah.
Tell me about this game.
This is an indie game I've been keeping an eye on for a while, and then the PS5 version ended up being a PS Plus game at its launch last week. So,
I love
freebie,
PlayStation
baby.
Plus. Freebie baby.
So, Mechat is an indie game put out by Annapurna, where it's a puzzle game. The entire main gimmick is you are outside of this maquette or this like diorama, like sort of artistic representation of like these four quadrants and these four buildings that are underneath a dome. And when you walk out of the dome, it is the same dome that's in the center of the maquette, and like the buildings at full scale are around you. And the way you basically solve the puzzle is you can find items and place them in the maquette to interact with stuff, but it works in reverse. It works going forward. Like, even if you, like, later in, like, the game's probably, like, 4 or 5-ish hours long. I beat it. A few hours in, you can find ways to literally exit the big version of the maquette you're in and find out you're even inside another larger one.
Is that like a big twist, I guess, at the end to encourage you to keep playing it?
Not really. It's maybe like 2 hours in, and it's mainly just to give you an idea of like new ways to solve puzzles. Because
oh no, there's a bigger maquette. I can totally see them presenting that as a problem.
It's not even like they pull back to reveal it to you. It's just like you're like, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense the way this has been working. Because
I would have loved it if you went outside and just went, oh no, we're inside a bigger maquette.
Because basically, the way it works to help you solve puzzles is, think of it this way. Let's say I pick up a key that is like normal key size in front of me, right? Mm-hmm. If I take that key and put it down inside the maquette, it'll now outside generate a key at scale. So a giant key will appear in the full-size maquette. Likewise, yeah. I can take something at full scale, put it in the maquette and make it like, rather put it outside the maquette. So if, let's say I find that same key, like a giant key already existed in the maquette when I got there. I can take it out of the maquette, put it outside on the ground, and then it will make a small one inside the small maquette.
Like a Russian doll.
Yeah, like every item is represented on every version of the plane you're on.
That's pretty cool.
And that's how you play with the scale of it. Like, there's a puzzle early on that I really liked, and the reason I brought up the key is you're trying to essentially use this key to unlock a door. So what you end up having to do is first place the key outside of the maquette to generate a small one inside the smaller maquette, which you can then use to open the lock without having to go to the door, because it's now the proper scale for the small door. Now the door is unlocked in, like, the your scale version, and you can actually take the key at normal scale and place it in the maquette to make a bridge to get to the door. Like, there's...
I'm sure in the game that is so straightforward and simple, but what you just said made my head spin.
It sounds baffling, but, like, they set you up pretty easy and slowly give you an idea of, like, how this is gonna work. Like, you'll go through a couple of platforms and find, like, a small bridge. So now you're like, okay, this tiny bridge, I'm going to take this back to the maquette and put it down somewhere. Like, I'll look and I'll see a place like, oh, there's an obvious gap here, so I'm going to put this bridge down, and now I have a full-scale bridge in the real world. And it adds that, like, third layer once you realize, oh, there's, like, a trap door here, and I can go outside, and there's an even bigger scale version of stuff. And I can start, like, sneaking in gaps and fences and moving these staircases around to, like, get over walls. They do a lot of really neat stuff with it. Like I said, probably, like, 5-ish hours. The story is following, it's sort of about this couple, and it's kind of going through, like, an art book they drew together. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Annapurna is owned by some big Hollywood studio. So they have like Hollywood.
I didn't know that, but I don't know the studio. I just know that they got the big poll.
Like the voice of the girlfriend in this is Bryce Dallas Howard. They're getting some star power in there.
Can you imagine they go to Bryce Dallas Howard? They're like, they want to be Maquette, and she's like, all right.
They just like caught her.
It's better than Jurassic World 2.
They just caught her in an elevator after she was done like directing an episode of The Mandalorian,
and she was like, all right. Fine,
I'll do your game.
That's pretty cool, though.
It feels really hard to explain, but, like, there's some really smart ideas here, and each chapter, I want to say there's 6 chapters in total, is, like, built around a different puzzle idea. Like, one of them is built around moving and rescaling a particular staircase. One of them is built around these colored gems that you can use to, like, sort of bring down these barriers as you approach them. At one point, there's literally a puzzle that involves you picking up a scale model of the building you are in and, like, moving it to change the angle it's on so you can reach different things. They do some wild shit with it. It's a really cool game.
I like when puzzle games do that. I know The Witness...
It reminds me of The Witness in a lot of ways.
I was going to say, it has a grade A degree in perspective just like that. Just like any other good puzzle game where it plays with your perspective and angles, it's pretty damn cool. So that's pretty neat to hear. I always like a good puzzle game that does that.
And it's one of those games where you'll be scratching your head for like 20 minutes on something, and then when you finally figure it out, you're like, oh, I'm an idiot, but also that's kind of genius.
It's like, you moron. But I have such a love-hate relationship when I play with puzzle games, though, because I have those exact moments that in microseconds I'll be like, Eric, you moron. I'll be like, but you're so smart, you got it. Like, yeah.
But, like, and I had one of those long nights with it the night I beat it where, like, I did, like, two chapters in a row, and then I got up to, I think, chapter 6, and it gives you, like, chapter card titles, and it was, like, chapter 6, the end. And I was like, oh, well, I gotta keep going now.
I hate when they do that. It just keep... Yeah, but it's a short game, though, and you probably just beat it in one setting anyways.
Yeah.
That sounds actually like a really good game. But this is on PS Plus, you were saying. This is not on computer, I'm guessing. This is on consoles.
It's on Steam, I believe. I'm gonna verify. Yes, it is $17.99 on Steam.
Well, we're free on PS Plus, but free with quotes because you got to pay for it.
Free on PS Plus specifically for PS5. It is the PS5 version that is free.
Interesting. Cool. I like the sound of it. I'm glad more puzzle games keep coming into the market. It's always good to have.
It's also a very pretty puzzle game, and it's got a hell of a soundtrack. A lot of like soft indie rock stuff that it uses to pretty good effect.
Even looking at the pictures, I could hear the soundtrack. It's probably just a vibe, just going in, solving puzzles.
Yeah, 100% that.
6 hours fly by.
Really great game. If you happen to have a PS5, definitely grab that.
And if you have Steam and you have $18, grab it.
Yeah.
And if you're not looking for Maquette and you haven't played The Witness, I think that's harder and longer.
It's definitely way harder.
Yeah. I remember Vinny was playing that, and he loves that kind of crap. He loves puzzle games, especially to that degree, and even he thought it was an aggravating challenge. Not in a good way, but once he finally beat it, he was like, oh god, I'm so happy to be done with it, as if it was a chore.
The Witness was one of those games, and like I hadn't had one of these in a very long time, where I went out and bought a notebook that I ended up just filling with like scrap, where I would have to like draw out the puzzle and try and like just sit down and be like, is this gonna work?
I like it when games do it. The last game, it wasn't even a puzzle game, if you want to call it. It was a Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Yeah.
Like that kind of, that was the last game like I printed out physical materials for.
I remember.
For the books. Yeah, and I had the binders for those. That was fun.
I remember showing up to people's houses with this, like, here's everybody's bomb defusal manual.
When I brought that out to play with my family, I was like, yeah, let me just go get the binders. And they were like, what? I'm like, yeah, because, you know, let's go to Office Max and get a 500-page count for paper and print this shit out, and let's just go do it.
What I will say, and I do actually love, and I think it's probably the best way to play Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, is the VR version, where literally the bomb defuser is the only one that can see the bomb because they're in VR and nobody else is.
Yeah, it was a pretty neat game. But yeah, any puzzle game that has to, you know, whip out the book, I appreciate it. My patience is so thin for that kind of shit, though.
Yeah, but also, fucking come on.
Well, yeah. Imagine you're just playing it like, come on. You have to make a mental note of it and just start writing it. It depends. Like, the guy who made The Witness, what else did he make? It was another good game. It was another great puzzle game. It wasn't Braid, was it?
I don't think it was the Braid guy. I'll look that up.
It wasn't Braid guy. Whatever it was, I know he made a previous puzzle game too. And that was a pretty good one. So good that I can't even remember the name. Blow.
It was Jonathan Blow? Was Jonathan Blow Braid? A Braid?
John Blow. I think so. But I've been wrong before. John Blow, what did he make? As my internet keeps taking. He did! It was Braid! Look at that.
He was the Braid guy.
Creator of the indie game Braid. Look at that. I knew. Because when it came out, they were like, from the creator of Braid. So, Braid was great. Love that game. Big hit.
Everybody loves Braid.
Everybody loves Braid. When that first came out, if you liked puzzle games, you were talking about Braid. Especially just because it was a dude in a suit just collecting puzzle pieces. Great.
This game came out. I think about Indie Game the movie all the time.
Oh, wonderful. This game came out. They're like, hey, remember Braid? Good game, right? Well, here's The Witness. And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be great. Game's fucking hard. Not for the faint of heart. Oh, it says here on his wiki page, he dropped out of college, as if that was worth mentioning
So my favorite part of Indie Game, the movie, is when Ed McMillan is upset that Soulja Boy didn't enjoy Braid, right?
What are you going to do? You can't please everybody. And Ed McMillan is definitely a person that gets disappointed easily with a lot of different things.
I met Ed McMillan 3 times, and I'll bet he was disappointed with me all 3.
He gets very disappointed.
Maybe
from
he
what
wasn't.
I've read,
he showed me a little book where he drew the Meat Boy cutscenes.
He drew the Meat Boy for it. So that's Maquette, though. Tell me, have you played? We talked about Persona 5 last time, but tell me about.
I finished that up.
You did.
I finished Strikers. About the 30-hour mark it took me. That's doing pretty
that's
much
bad.
All of the side stuff.
That's what a $60 game.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
That's pretty good. I won't harp on it because we already really talked about it, and I got a review coming out soon. But
fan, did you like it?
Yes, and my main thing I'll say is I wouldn't recommend this. I'd recommend this to Persona fans before I'd recommend this to Musou fans. It is more traditionally a Persona game than it is a traditional Musou game, which is surprising, and probably why I managed to stick with it, because Musou games don't tend to do a lot for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, when it comes to Musou games that are based off a popular IP, like, say, the One Piece Pirate Warriors games, typically, for those who have played it, they're not the biggest Musou fans, but they are, or even Hyrule Warriors, not the biggest Musou fans, but they are a big fan of the core material and the core game.
But also, this is,
as long as you enjoy
more,
it.
More so than even Hyrule Warriors, this is a bigger departure for the gameplay of a Musou game than I've ever seen.
You did say they did combine some of the turn-based elements into the Musou.
Oh, there you are.
You did say that they combined some of the turn-based,
yeah,
though.
Well, not even like generally turn-based, but like they're instance battles. Like, it's more like it's an action RPG than anything else, but I think it works.
Well, for 30 hours, I mean, if you're a big fan of it, it expands the story a little bit, so it's not that bad.
Yeah, it gives you the story is a little ham-fisted at times, but I think what works for me more than anything probably is seeing those characters together again, like less so than the actual bigger narrative hooks, but just having those characters interacting again, and I think all that stuff's pretty well written.
Do you think there'll be another game to expand the story out some more?
I mean, we got a dancing game, we got this.
I mean, we got the dancing game. I mean,
you have
how much more else?
Dancing
you,
Star
how much
Night.
More can you make?
Never say never with Persona, but I think it's almost time for Persona 6. I think we got to be getting there soon.
Just give me a new Shin Megami Tensei. I don't give a shit about it. I mean, I care about Persona, but...
Also, we're getting that.
I know, but I want it now. You know? I just want it now compared to later.
You're gonna get it.
That'd be cool.
Hey, you're gonna get it.
I think the fans are gonna really enjoy this one. Like, what do you know? CrossCode, I played it years ago.
Yeah.
Never beat it. I don't even think I gave it the time of day past the first couple of hours, and that's not because it's a bad game. I just think that something else came out, and I just lost interest. But how have you been liking it?
I played like 2 or 3 hours. Excuse me. Closer to 3 hours.
If it's not that good, just
no, it's good. CrossCode. I like it so far. I don't know what I expected of it, I guess it's hard. Like, CrossCode's been out for a while, but now, like, all of the content is fully there. It's all packaged, playable start to finish with everything it's supposed to have.
It's on Game Pass, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
So CrossCode, visually, it always reminds me of, like, what would, like, a modern Chrono Trigger or something like that look like? And then from the gameplay end, it taking a lot from, like, the action RPGs of that day, like the Secrets of Mana and all that. He plays a character named Lee. I really do like the setup of the story of this game, because they don't make it clear early on. You're kind of not getting a lot of information while you learn the combat and everything. But the main setup is you are entering this sort of, like, MMO world. But in this future, they compare it to an MMO, but I guess it technically isn't, because it's all, like, real and physical. The idea of it is people in another location are essentially logging into this game and taking control of androids on this island, which is where the game plays out. So it's like Westworld if you didn't actually enter Westworld, but remotely controlled an avatar.
Yeah, I was going to say it's literally, like, dot hacky, but just Westworld-y.
Yeah, like, I think that's a cool, like, middle ground for that, because it's like, well, how do you make it so immersive? And it's like, well, by making it, like, technically real. Like, there's robots and stuff.
Yeah, I kind of liked it outside of the trope of you get locked in a game or something like that.
And the other idea is you're...
I dig that a lot more.
You're not supposed to be there. Your character's lost their memory, and it's somehow tied to this place. So you don't enter the game the way people normally do. Like, you're being smuggled in on a boat to the island, and you get dropped in, like, randomly in the middle of the entrance tutorial stuff after they've already taught you, which leads to a really great encounter I like, where I think you're level 4 at this point, and you're on the tutorial track, and this guy calls you out because, like, there's no way you could have already hit level 4 this far into the tutorial. You should only be level 3, so clearly you're cheating, and now I'm going to prove you're a cheater, and I'm going to beat you, and he's just, like, a fucking jerk about it.
Jesus. I bet you there's going to be this spoiler where you're somebody really important.
I
or maybe not.
I don't doubt it. But the combat's fun. It's tied to your actual, like, character class in the MMO. Which is, they point out early, actually, you're a very unpopular class. You're what's called a Spearomancer. So you have, like, sort of twin sticky, like, projectiles you can throw. And you can also attack close range with these blades. But the action works really quick. You have a shield. You have a dodge you can use to move around quickly. And you can charge up those projectiles. You can do all sorts of stuff with them. I've only gotten one other party member so far who is, I don't remember what... Pentafist. That's the class of the other party member I had gotten. And it's designed like it's supposed to be, like, a game. So as you meet these people, like, I could keep playing with just the main character, Lee, or anytime, like, in the story where you quote-unquote log into the game, you can go to the game's internal, like, friendless chat and, like, request, be like, hey, party up, and then that person will, like, message you back and show up.
Imagine they message you back and they're just like, nah.
Like, nah.
I'm good. Not to leave you on red.
I'm busy, big homie.
I'm busy playing this game, big homes. Like, what?
What's that fucking mean?
It's a game that I always say I'm going to go back to, and I know I will. The one game that currently holds that title is Cave Story. Never did. Never went back to Cave Story.
Obviously, you were a liar.
Has maybe 50 iterations. I've made so many written lists before of games that I know I would beat one day. Cave Story Plus is always at the top of that list. Never touch it again.
I will say what I think one of the strongest suits in this game is some of the writing with the guy who is sort of talking in your ear, supposed to be helping you recover your memories. As you start doing some of the random quests you can pick up that are clearly, like, you know, quests built into the game properly, where it'll be like some guy at an ice cream shop in the starter town. He's like, we can't make any ice cream because we don't have any ice. Can you climb the mountain and bring us back ice? And he'll be like, is this guy fucking serious?
He's like, I don't even, he goes, I know bullshit when I see it. I'm not doing that. Do you know the identity of the person who's talking to you?
Like, you're introduced to all these characters, but the thing is, when they plug you in, like, you have almost no memory. And all they seem to know is that it's tied to the game. So you're trying to figure all that out. So Oh, and also there's some sort of weird glitch supposedly with your character's voice module in the game. So they can't talk early on, and slowly as you progress, your handler keeps programming into your code like keywords. So at this point, I think I'm able to say my own name, hi, and bye, which is fun because it leads to really weird interactions with other players, quote unquote.
It's a full vocabulary right there.
I can say the important stuff.
I mean, that's all you ever need to do. I thought you were going to say that there's a voice modulator on your voice or whatever while it's being corrected, so it's just like that deep throaty-esque monotone, like, "Hey, Gordo."
Waka waka. My favorite character in the game so far is a maintenance man I met on the boat on the way in who... There's, like, a number of people who are really excited because, like, wow, we got an avatar on the boat. But then you talk to this guy, he's like, oh, it's you. He's like, I know I should be excited, but he's like, I'm really into robots, and you're not technically a real robot. And he's, like, cleaning this actual robot on the boat. He's like, I only really like real robots.
Ew.
And I'm like, I like this guy. He's a weirdo.
It's like, now this is the kind of guy I like. Now he has good taste.
There's also a boat captain who always has a gigantic jetpack on his back. And when asked about it, he's like, never leave home without it.
Unreal. The graphics also, they look great. The character designs are fun.
It
just looks
cool
like a pretty solid game.
Yeah.
It's a solid game. I've always read whenever somebody has ever beaten it and they've said, like, oh, I've beaten it before, any review or any outlet, they're like, yeah, you actually got to play this game. Like, everybody's been sleeping on this game for whatever reason, but I always feel like once every few years, somebody new beats it. It's probably going to be you. Once every new year, a few years, somebody beats the game and then goes back on the radar and says, like, no, you guys gotta beat this fucking game. Like,
code,
you play this game and actually give it a chance. And that was years ago. So I definitely will. They actually came out with the soundtrack on vinyl less than a year ago.
The music is very good.
Yeah. But it's a good game. It's free on Game Pass, though. I know you can get it on Steam for, like, nothing at this point. It's been out for so long.
I had already owned the PlayStation version because I think I picked it up a while back when it was on sale for like $4 or something.
I think it's even on Switch now, to be fair. I think.
I thought about buying it for like the mobility of it, but I just ended up like starting the PlayStation version because, you know, it was there.
I mean, you already had it.
Exactly. So I'm going to say so far so good on that. I'm definitely... It's probably a time commitment of a game, but I'm really liking what I played of it so far, so I'm gonna keep plugging away at it.
Love it. All right, let's go ahead and get into... we're almost at time here. Let's go ahead and get into the drop. One thing out of this drop, I would say Hyperscape, the fact that it even has a season 3, it's mind-boggling to me. I didn't even know that shit was even on the map still. I thought that was just like a beta and then they disappeared forever.
It sure didn't somehow. Let's run you through all that.
It sure is.
First Strike Classic hits PC March 10th. Nightfall Hacker hits PC March 10th. Cyanide and Happiness Freakpocalypse Part 1 hits PC and Switch on March 11th. And
I thought this crap was supposed to come out like a year ago. I could have swore this was supposed to come out.
You were wrong.
I could have swore this was supposed to come out like 2 years ago.
It probably was. As Eric teased earlier, Hyperscape Season 3 Shadow Rising hits PC, PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, and Xbox One on March 11th. I'm glad to see they're finally adding Shadow the Hedgehog to this game.
I still have not even seen this game being played. I didn't even look it up. I just heard it was Tron-esque, and I was kind of interested, but then I was like, no, it's another Battle Royale.
The day it dropped, I played a round of it with our friend Vinny, and then I uninstalled it. It was fine. I see. Monster Truck Championship hits PS5
now
and Xbox Series X in Europe March 11th.
Now we're talking. I'm surprised that this hasn't released earlier. You think Gravedigger is still in games like these?
Maybe.
You think if I look this game up, do you think Gravedigger will be on the cover?
I don't know if it's officially... You know, who knows if it's officially licensed, though, you know? Like,
Seen games that have not been officially licensed and officially licensed for whatever reason. Gravedigger is always there.
Gravedigger.
I'm sorry. Please continue while I look this up. I'm just going to take it away here.
Total War 3 Kingdoms, Fates Divided DLC. It's PC March 11th. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, is getting its PS5, Xbox Series X, and Switch versions on March 12th. Drive-By hits PC and Switch on March 12th. The Elder Scrolls Online Flames of Ambition DLC hits PS4 and Xbox One on the 16th. Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning finally comes to Switch on the 16th. And Monster Truck Championship hits PS5, Xbox Series X, and the US on March 16th. Mundan hits PC, PS4, and Xbox One on the 16th. And finally, Samurai Showdown is coming to Xbox Series X on the 16th.
So I don't think the Gravedigger is in this game. However, in Google
Gravedigger.
Just like that, every single fucking time. However, Google Images has reminded me of previous Gravedigger appearances, and it's been in a lot, which is astounding.
Do you remember?
Like, just think, it's a monster truck. That's a household name. That's his household. Gravedigger, in my brain, is his household name as Jeff Gordon. And it's a fucking truck. I don't even know who drives Gravedigger.
More so, I would say.
Than Jeff Gordon?
I think, yeah. I think.
You want to put money? You know what? I bet you more people our age will know Gravedigger more than Jeff Gordon.
I think so.
At least on Long Island. So. At least on Long Island.
Yeah, sure. No, 100%. 100%.
For sure. Damn. Jeff Gordon got the stiff end, the short end of the stick there.
And they'll all go, Gravedigger.
I do remember going to see the show, I have to admit. It was like the equivalent of northern version of NASCAR. It was pretty great.
Do you think if if you're a driver for Gravedigger, when you die, it actually comes to the ceremony and uses its mighty tires to dig your
what,
grave?
The truck? The truck?
Yeah. it uses its mighty tires to dig
really,
your grave.
It's something like really fucked where you tie the casket to Gravedigger and it's just dragging you
while Rob Zombie plays. It's like, burn through the witches and dang.
And clearly there's no pavement that can gently drag this across. So it's just on the highway and the entire casket just breaks, of course, and your body's just flailing.
It's just a flailing body on the highway.
It's just like the most sacrilegious thing that you can do. Oh, and then it goes over one of those dirt mountains to do a cool trick while your body's still tied to. Oh, that'd be perfect. That'd be perfect. What a way to go out.
That's how I want to go out.
If only we could all be so lucky. Yeah.
I want you to remember that those are my wishes, and now you go and here to transport the body. Body and now to transport the body to where it will be laid to rest as per Rich's will is Gravedigger.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm sorry, I have to do the voice, and it's like the pastor.
Is Gravedigger!
Oh, that'd be a good one. I'm curious to see how Crash Bandicoot 4 does in terms of reviews.
Yeah, and that's a...
And I think it's pretty damn cool that it's coming out on Switch the same day. It's the PS5 and Xbox.
Switch is very cool. I'm going to download that free upgrade for the PS4 version. Right. Just to kind of see what kind of performance we're getting out of it. Like, if we can get 60 frames out of that bad boy, that'd be hella good.
That'd be pretty good. The only news, because I know we're kind of at time, just because I know this is recent, V1 Interactive shut down. And if you don't know who they are, they made Disintegration last year. Supposed to be kind of a live service game.
We sat through a presentation about it.
We did. And this was from... I think the guy, what was his name? Marcus Leto. He left Bungie to start the studio.
Yeah.
To make the game. Didn't want to make it a Halo game.
It was a shooter.
And I think on Game Industry
hybrid.
Has an entire thing. I think Game Industry, when I was reading this, I think I read it off there because I read everything off of there. But like a year ago, he talks about how he doesn't want Disintegration to be Halo, which is fine. He wants it to be a live service game. The guy leaves Bungie. Great. Literally, I think... Half into 2020, they shut down the multiplayer because it did not get the player base they wanted. Which, sure, you could argue COVID. That's pretty fucking bad because everybody's inside. They had nothing to do anyways, and your game still didn't get wings. Not a good sign. So that was kind of wild, and now it's officially over. And I think this is the only game that this studio has made.
Yes, no, this was their premiere game.
Yeah, so that's a really big bummer.
That sucks.
Gotta say. That sucks.
I hope man. The folks that were working there land on their feet. The thing I will say that I think is unfortunate, which is why this game didn't work out, based off the time we had spent with it and the things I had seen about it and the things I had read about it, I still sort of feel the same way I felt walking out of that PAX demo, is like, it was a hybrid of a first-person shooter and a tactics game, and I think it tries to do too much and subsequently doesn't do any of the things it's trying to do that well.
That's after... We always play a number of demos for these kinds of games where they try to shove in as many mechanics as they can from other games that everybody loves. They just always do. Mm-hmm. Demos on demos and demos of it. You play it at conventions and everything. It's just too much. Yeah. It just feels completely unnecessary to just have all that. I remember even, say Halo. Even though I think this is actually well received. Remember the card system that Halo had that they implemented in 5 or something? 5.
I believe it was 5. It's just weird.
There comes a time where every game or games, when they're starting out, implement this whack-ass system to just add on top of your game. It's just too much. So this game already suffered from just having way too much stuff at once that overwhelms everybody. It's unnecessary. You can't properly balance this for shit, which is the main problem, in my opinion, when you have like 5 different systems working in your game. And then you expect it to take off.
When you need to have a theater set aside in your PAX booth to give a 20-minute presentation to people about to play your demo before they play your demo, that's a red flag.
You literally have to bring them in and say, okay, what you're about to play is this. Let's just explain how you do this. I'll be damn, man, you're kind of undercutting like the entire experience because it's supposed to be a pick-up-and-play kind of game.
Like, imagine if, like, 30 years ago, before, like, we had genre-defining stuff in the way that we do, like, there was a PAX and there was a demo for GoldenEye, but before you could play, you had to watch a 20-minute presentation on what a first-person shooter was.
Well, it's just like any other... It's user experience 101. Anytime I've ever played a game for a demo, mind you, if I'm ever playing a demo of something, no matter what it is, whether it's a game or anything in life, and I need you to come aside and explain this to me while I'm playing your demo, it's already too much for me. Like, we're not even talking about glitches or incomplete. We're just talking about the game's premise is already too much to me, and I've already written it off. The prime example for that, at least from last PAX, was Iron Harvest, or whatever the hell it was. The game based off of Scythe, the board game. The RTS. Game looked great. Art style looked great. I had no fucking clue what I was doing because the demo was so poorly made in terms of instruction that I immediately wrote it off within like 5 minutes playing it, because that's just what people do. So wild. I remember Disintegration. I remember you even talked about it. I remember you're like, I can't even tell you what I just played because it was just too much of it. So I didn't even know it was released. So there you go. That's all you need to know about that. Lastly, GameStop formed a committee.
Bet they did.
To help transform the business into a tech business.
It's not going
instead
great.
Of a retailer business. I can tell you right now, things are not going great for GameStop outside of the stock. I don't know what the future holds.
We're gonna check with Reggie to see how that's going.
Yeah, go to our local consultant Reggie here to tell. I have a prediction that in like 5 years' time, GameStop not only will still be floating around, it's going to be wildly successful. I still think it's going to be successful in what it's
going to
do.
If it is, it's going to be doing something wildly different, but I don't think that's impossible.
I think COVID really just fucked it. I really think they had a pretty good idea with the whole Cyber Cafe deal.
That business model,
I really thought
they were
going to go somewhere with it.
Yeah, no, that was an idea that could have worked, and then this all happened.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I'm so curious to see as a business what they do. Let me tell you, if they claw out from this, people are going to study them. They're going to study them in schools because it's wild. I mean, not only is the whole investment debacle from Robinhood and everything, not only is that already making history in terms of just abusing the current investor market, but if the company itself actually drudges its way out from the trenches and becomes moderately successful by completely changing their model, That'd be pretty wild.
That'd
I mean,
be
hell.
something to behold.
And Reggie would be heralded as the lone hero, even though he's only
Reggie,
in like what, the marketing
yeah.
department. He wouldn't
Reggie,
even be doing anything.
I think he's just like a consultant on the board or whatever. Like Reggie Fils-Aimé, brilliant spearhead of Bigfoot Pizza. Nothing can
I
stop
mean,
him.
business ideas. They told him that nothing could be bigger than Bigfoot Pizza, and he literally looked at them and said, "Just watch me."
You have no idea
So,
how high I can fly.
and this was after his time at Nintendo. He actually said that after he left Nintendo as the president.
A lot of people actually don't know this. He made a call that day and came up with the Cheez-It pizza as well.
I'll show you how high I can fly. Oh, that'd be such a good story. He'd probably write a book after that. That's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, there's other news, but it's not really a lot of other news. I
There's
mean,
not
it's
a
just some
lot
other odds and ends. Not a whole
going
lot.
on.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we go into housekeeping?
I think we pretty much covered it.
All right. Well, what are you gonna do? Get the broom out. We're done.
I'm gonna get the broom. Big thank you, very
I really
much.
thought you were going to say Bigfoot Pete. I was like, stop. Just
Big
stop.
foot pizza. Big thanks to Ed Biquette for our wonderful intro and Heather Ramos for our artwork. Send us emails, geckogamespodcast@gmail.com. Eric, where can people find you?
Nowhere, I guess. I do have a Twitter. It's @beautiful_Eric. That's it.
Awesome. You can also find me on Twitter at the Rich
I have my finger on the
Maestro.
pulse of all social media
You
channels.
gotta be tweeting. Always be tweeting. ABT.
Always be tweeting ABT. I know I'm cutting into something. Wait, is there anything else with housekeeping besides just saying really
Just
important?
saying where, yeah, that's pretty much it. You can say stuff.
Speaking of tweets, because now people are buying virtual pieces of the internet now.
Oh God, we should. I should have set us up
Jack
some time to talk about
Dorsey's.
that nonsense.
We'll talk. You know what? No, stay tuned. We'll talk about it next week. I don't feel like
We'll
talking
say,
about it right
yeah,
now. There you go.
no, I got thoughts on that and about how we're destroying the world.
I got thoughts on that one.
I got thoughts on everything.
Yeah, I got thoughts on that. Yeah, don't worry about
But
that.
yeah, until then, find us on Twitter, find me at my other home at searchjump.com, and find me in the dumpster behind your local pizza hut. Eric, let's get the fuck out of here.